big show for you here today. It is the NFC edition of our new head coaching hire breakdown extravaganza. Nate Tice joins me once again to break down all the new hires here in the NFC, head coaches, play callers, what to expect from some of these new schemes, which players might benefit. And there's some surprising ones that we like here in the NFC that the rest of the fantasy bros out there, they're going to talk you down on. We're actually going to zig when they zag. So tons of great stuff in this episode. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that for part two of our coaches show, it is our guy, Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Great to see you. NFC. I really do enjoy the shows. Also, nice to hear you in the intro this time around when I didn't have to pantomime and insert space of what I relips of what you said. No, so great to see you. Very excited to do these shows. Last time was a lot of fun. This will be a lot of fun too.
We had, I would argue, too much fun at the end of the show, especially on the AFC coaching show.
I thought about that actually. 4 hours of potting together. You do Godfather Part Two. Timeline, yeah. of Avengers Endgame timeline of podcasting together. It can happen.
I thought about that later on Tuesday evening, and if you missed it, of course, this is part two. We are covering the NFC new coaching hires here, head coaches, play callers. We did the AFC on Tuesday. If you somehow missed that show, it was great, but the last segment in particular, I think Nate and I really just undid a few extra buttons here, really pitched some heat on that one, and frankly just got weird at the end of it. I mean, I thought about that later. I was like, the last 15 minutes of that show, probably some of the strangest podcasting I've ever done, where essentially we maybe pitched John Gruden and your dad to the Jets coaching staff. So again, people should definitely go back and check out that here. We are going to get into the NFC new coaching hires here, but before we do that, little housekeeping here. Fantasy baseball is back, and playing with your friends is easier and more fun than ever. Get your crew together and play with your friends today, whether it is a public league or a private league. Step up to the plate and hit a fantasy home run with new features like upgraded commission draft tools, easier roster management, and a social first community feed in the app. It is the perfect time to play fantasy baseball on the Yahoo Fantasy app. So get after that here. And we're going to get after it here today, Nate, because we don't have quite as much coaching change to go over in the NFC, but still quite a lot. As I mentioned on the last show, we had four returning offensive coordinators to their teams in the AFC. We have a whopping six here in the NFC. So great. All right. That's wonderful. That is why we're doing this two-part deep dive here. And it is going to be, I think we have some interesting conversations to get into here today. Just to table set the NFC coaching turnover, we have new head coach and play caller hires with the Arizona Cardinals. Mike LaFleur, head coach and play caller. He has Nathaniel Hackett as his offensive coordinator for the Falcons. They hired Kevin Stefanski, and Stefanski brought over offensive coordinator Tommy Rees, who is likely going to be calling plays for the Atlanta Falcons. The New York Giants hired John Harbaugh and Matt Nagy as the offensive coordinator. Then we have new offensive coordinators with defensive or CEO head coaches. The Commanders promoted David Blau to be their offensive coordinator after a couple of years on the staff, moving on from Cliff Kingsbury there. The Lions hired Drew Petzing. The Bucks hired Zach Robinson. And then we have three teams with the same head coach but new offensive coordinators. The biggest one and the only one that we're going to really discuss in depth here is Sean Mannion being hired by the Eagles to take over for Kevin Petullo, one of the Twitter nemesis is Kevin Petullo. We'll see how long Sean Mannion can avoid the Twitter spotlight. The Bears also did promote Press Taylor to take Declan Doyle's job. We're not going to discuss that one because Ben Johnson's still the guy there. No need to break that down. And it's also worth noting that the Rams do not have an offensive coordinator yet of this taping. Again, we're not going to discuss the Rams because Nate, Sean McVay is still the head honcho there, but they're still trying to figure out who is actually going to be offensive coordinator. They hired Cliff Kingsbury to their staff. They retained Nathan Shielhouse, and I believe Dave Ragone is the quarterback coach there, correct?
Nailed it.
And he's in contention to have that job. But anyway, so we're going to do the same thing as the last episode. We're going to sort these into three categories here, but still a lot of turnover here to go. And I didn't mention either. The Seahawks hired Brian Flory to be their offensive coordinator. So a ton going on here, Nate.
There a lot, like you said, a whopping six returning offensive coordinators and play callers, and that's why we're going to see so many new hires, and also just like way more interesting because like this year, this cycle, there were so many head coach openings, like we talked about in the AFC show, but also it wasn't just like offensive play callers getting hired because who are you hiring? Even the Stefanski-Reese right. thing is interesting. The fact that he's kind of like relinquishing that and turning more CEO-ish, which I think is really interesting as well. But no, a lot to go over. Some stylistic shifts as well for some of these teams. Some teams that are interesting to percolate about, as me and you are starting mm-hmm. to do with the Arizona Cardinals. Maybe a cactus analogy of something some sort there. But there is like there's a lot to go over because we got some familiar names, we got new names, we got trees getting plucked from that are interesting. I'm actually really excited to go through the NFC as well because I just think that the makeup of these teams are so interesting as well.
Well, like I said, we're sorting into three categories here. The first is I like it. The third is or second is it's fine. And the last one is I am skeptical. And since you brought up those Arizona Cardinals, let's get into them right now, because the Arizona Cardinals hiring Mike LaFleur is indeed in my I like it category. And that might be a bit of a controversial opinion because LaFleur was the last guy who was hired. The Cardinals job was not a desirable one. I think even Cardinals fans knew that and accepted that pretty early. People who cover the team knew that and were kind of putting that out there. So they were not going to get the Jesse Minters or the, you know, insert hot head coaching candidates of the world. But Nate, I really like them landing on Mike LaFleur. So when you saw this, I'll give my thoughts as well. But when you saw this, they hired Mike LaFleur, who, for people who are not aware, was the Rams offensive coordinator the last few years. He was previously the Jets offensive coordinator and play caller in the first 2 years of the Robert Saleh era before being scapegoated for that in order for them to move on to the super static Aaron Rodgers offense under Nathaniel Hackett, who ironically is Mike LaFleur's offensive coordinator right. here. We'll unpack that. We'll unpack that as well.
It's actually kind of funny.
It is very funny. And before that, Mike LaFleur was under Kyle Shanahan. Of course, he was as the 49ers pass game coordinator for 3 years there with the San Francisco 49ers. So, with all that being said, Nate, your thoughts on the Mike LaFleur hiring by the Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah, like you said, and we talked about this on Tuesday on one of the shows because it all blends together, but we kind of hinted at it and just talking about how we actually were more encouraged by this hire than maybe you would at first glance. I mean, they were the last seat to get filled. And it's not like in the old days of like 3-4 years ago where the last seat to get filled was because you're waiting for the Super Bowl teams to win. And that's why you have to fill it, because that's when you could officially interview the guy, tampering, all that fun stuff. While the Raiders kind of had to go through that, and kind of the Cardinals, because they were interviewing Clint Kubiak. And at least it's encouraging because you're plucking a guy that's been around enough. He's young, but has been around enough in important roles. You're not bumping him up from quarterback coach. This isn't Lane Kiffin getting hired as from quarterback coach at USC to be the head coach of the Raiders at like 33 years old. It's not that. LaFleur's been around. Obviously his brother coaches with the Packers. He's a coach's kid as well. He, though, is that he's kind of had his hands in everything. He's worked with receivers. He's worked passing game wise. I think with McVay, and this is behind the scenes, I think this is more reported stuff, is he had an influence on the run game and some of the stylistic changes that the Rams have gone through the last year, becoming more man duo centric, more vertical, as opposed to more, you know, kind of merging some worlds. That's why the Rams are so interesting. He was a part of that. Has experience calling plays, which is also a plus too. I always get a little hesitant when the OC
sure
gets plucked and then they're like, yeah, I'm calling plays now too. And it's like, well, you didn't before.
You weren't.
Well, that's scary.
Great call.
Like, why are you taking, like, you know, Brian Callahan with the Titans, maybe a good example of recent times. It could work. Mike McDaniel,
Zach Taylor with the Bengals.
Zach Taylor, yeah, and took him a while to finally like figure it out, and a quarterback helps. But I think with LaFleur, though, there's encouraging bones here. The offensive line coach hire, I think it's just that they're not going to be able to break. You're not going to attract the top candidates. And second off, I don't think they pay assistants top dollar. And offensive line coaches, any of them worth their weight, is going to get paid top dollar. So that's one little blemish. But I think LaFleur, though, at least shows that he can kind of blend the whole scheme together. I like this. What he did with the Jets was always interesting. Really good red zone designs always. Really good gadget stuff because they had to, because they had Zach Wilson at quarterback. And I don't know. I think like we talked about earlier this week, like I'm more encouraged about this. I like this a little bit more than maybe at first glance. They're not going to be good,
but they're going to at least definitely be interesting, at least in the meantime, until they figure out quarterback and everything else.
It's such a good point by you where you bring up that I always get weary of the guy essentially giving himself, like, he's already getting a promotion to head coach from offensive coordinator, but when they didn't call plays, you're essentially then giving yourself two promotions. I think about, you know, this is on the defensive side of the football, but with Gerard Mayo, like, he did that with the Patriots where like he was such an inexperienced coach. He's like, not only am I going to be the new head coach replacing Bill Belichick, I'm also giving myself like a defensive coordinator promotion here too. It's just like, whoa, like we're jumping several levels here when you don't have a lot of experience. But with LaFleur, who obviously didn't call plays consistently with Sean McVay's offense, there were a couple of games like in week 18 where Sean let Mike LaFleur and in the preseason like call plays and stuff like that, but he did have play calling experience with the Jets, and he's a long experienced head coach, so he's not one of these guys like a Matt Nagy who I promoted myself twice here to head coach and play caller. And speaking out of his time with the Jets, like, again, I know the metrics weren't great, it is what it is, we all know the deal with that, but I was coming back to this quote that we're showing on the screen right now from Garrett Wilson, where they played, it was a couple of years ago, the Jets played the Rams, and they asked him, the Jets media did, about Rams offensive coordinator at the time, Mike LaFleur. And Garrett, you know, kind of went on and on. He was like, I love him. You know, my rookie year, looking back on it, was a special time, and I might have took it for granted. And I think Garrett said that because they moved into, like, from this dynamic offense that wasn't perfect. I think LaFleur was obviously learning on the job. I'm not saying that he was blameless or anything like that, but an offense that felt very dynamic. They made really good use of like pony personnel with both Michael Carter, who's ironically was on this Cardinals roster last year, and Breece Hall, made a lot of like dynamic formations with like pony personnel with those two guys in the backfield together. They moved Garrett around a ton, which I talked to him after that rookie year, and he really talked about how much he loved playing from the slot and getting these two-way goes from condensed formations and stuff like that, to then going to this complete static Aaron Rodgers offense where we all know how that feels. Two totally different worlds, and I think that the Cardinals getting a little bit of that injection here from what LaFleur is likely going to bring to the table in the passing game specifically, and I want to get back to the run game here in a moment as well, but in the passing game specifically, I've just been thinking about this, especially because I've been charting Alec Pierce the last couple of days because I got the free agency drop coming for RP, and I promise this connects itself, but they used Alec Pierce.
It wasn't just
so
the token Alec Pierce mentioned that we always find a way to do.
It wasn't. But I was thinking about this with Pierce this morning, actually, because I don't have the numbers on this. I think you actually probably could look this up, but it felt like the Colts really condensed this year offensively, where even if Pierce is that X receiver from the last 3 years, you know, it was more so that pure boundary X, but now he's like so close to the line of scrimmage a ton. And I think that was a big part of why Pierce, close to the offensive line here and on the line of scrimmage. I think it's a big reason why Pierce had this big explosion as a player. And I was looking back at this because you sent me this last year that the Rams in 2024 had the shortest formation width for any offense in the league, and the Cardinals were, you know, they were closer to the top of the league. And we talk about this a lot with the receivers. It's like, well, why are they just using Marvin Harrison at X? Why don't they move him into the slot? It's like, the answer is not, I think honestly, if your answer to how do you get this receiver going is just like slot, you're living like 3 years ago. We can do things now where the guy is an outside receiver, but we make his life easier. So I think for all of these receivers, Harrison, Wilson, and Trey McBride, I think Petzing, we're going to talk about him later, got a little bit more villainized than he needed to, but strictly from a pre-snap deployment perspective like this, I think that there's going to be a lot more favorable formation opportunities for these pass catchers than we've seen previously in Arizona.
I think that's a great point, because how the Shanahan guys use condensed formations is, like, okay, they're blending run game stuff, all that, making jet motion, not like a drastic jet motion, keeps them close to the formation. But like when you use an X and what they call a nasty split, a close split, that typically you're only attacking, like traditionally, you're only attacking a couple ways. A crossing route, because you're trying to make it shorter for the guy to cross across the field. Maybe a spray fade. But what they did is they expanded the route tree to then you can do everything with a spray release, as they call it, which is just, you know, outside release. And then that way you can get to what was traditional X, you know, route tree, but then now we can make it, you know, threaten them. I always talk about rock, paper, scissors. They now, it's not just a crossing route coming from that. Okay, now they can run an out route. Okay, that's another option that they usually can run. But now they're running spray fades. Now they're running digs out of that. Now they're running two-way routes, whip routes out of that. They kind of just expanded it forever or more and more. And actually, as we sit here, like their receiver room actually makes a lot of sense if it's just a one-for-one translation of what the Rams have done. And I think LaFleur is smart enough to not just go like copy and paste. Like Zac Taylor, the first year with the Bengals, was copy and paste what they did in LA. And that he was like under center, bunch formation, 11 personnel, like so much Tyler Boyd, if I remember correctly. And then they've kind of expanded from there because of what Burrow likes. But, you know, if you have LaFleur running this, and Michael Wilson is an amazing fit for a Rams style offense, like amazing, amazing. You always bring this up. He can play all three spots, X, Z, and slot. And he's a perfect power slot. I mean, he is the quote unquote Puka Nacua role or the Robert Woods role or the Cooper Kupp role.
Yeah.
But that Z power slot, get jet motion stuff where they're part of the blocking scheme, really be a two-way threat as a blocker and a pass catcher. And then Marvin Harrison Jr. from those condensed splits can actually open up his route running tree. Then not be as static as he was maybe in the Petsing offense. The Petsing offense is very traditional, you know, and it's how they use the guys we've talked about so much. But with Harrison, though, like if he's using in a translated role from the Rams offense, think of him more as Brandon Cooks was used in that offense, how OBJ was used in that offense for the half year he was traded there before his knee exploded. Last year, Davante Adams, how he's used in that offense. A lot more vertically attacking, a lot of breaking routes, a lot of digs, stuff we like seeing Marvin Harrison Jr. on. Now they need a quarterback
he's
to
good
throw
at,
them.
Yeah,
they need a quarterback to throw them, which is I think they know too. And Jacoby will, Brissett, but they might be an interesting team as maybe looking elsewhere. Someone approached me. We talked about these QB landing spots and all that. They might be a little sneaky Tanner McKee team. That actually would make a little sense as a way to like kind of like
301.
Yeah. I know. It was like a little sneaky one. I like that. I liked when you said that. It was just kind of all right, but maybe keeping their options open. I'm curious. Once I see who the quarterback is, I'll feel a lot better of how I predict how this offense will look, if that makes sense, just in how they attack and everything. But yeah, I'm okay. They need offensive linemen, I think, more than anything. I think everyone's on the same page with that. But I'm more bullish on this than maybe how the process went, where it seems like, oh, we got this guy, I guess. It's like, no, for getting, quote unquote, just this guy, LaFleur is actually a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, I think I said this to you, again, on one of the shows that we did on Tuesday, that last year it felt like everybody's favorite hipster team was like either the Raiders or the Cardinals, and I was out on both of those teams. This year I actually think I want to buy in on both of those teams as hipster teams to invest in, especially from a fantasy standpoint, because of these trees coming in here. Like that's where I'm really excited. You're right. We do have to see who the quarterback is. It will be kind of funny if they do make the Tanner McKee trade, as we talked about on 301, because the Cardinals made the Kevin Cobb trade many years ago, and it feels like you're sort of swimming in the same creek on that one, but
I can remember that was just my thoughts, or it was just me just like,
no,
I was looking up the formation width stuff, by the way. The Rams were fourth, they had the fourth tightest splits last year as far as formation width. They had 20.9 yards. The league average is 20, it's 2 yards higher. The Cardinals last year were the sixth widest formations, so non-cadets, spread formations.
Yeah.
If you want to put one number, 28.3% of the Cardinals formations last year were spread. The Rams were at 7.3% were spread. So, yeah, and I think that fits the Cardinals offensive personnel very well.
I'm gonna need to have like a 3-hour conversation with you about some of those numbers, but we will not do it here on this podcast. My last thing, just to say, in addition to that being a big boost, your point about LaFleur helping them transition to a gap based run game, that's pretty good here, because that's sort of what the Cardinals were already living in. So they do need to make offensive line additions here and turnover, but I think that can help in terms of them getting the run game going, which is a problem last year because they were on like their fifth string running back at different times of the season. And the only other thing that I do think they could add here, and maybe, you know, Mike LaFleur just brings Tutu Atwell over for this, they need like a love of the game little small speed guy to do that at the motion at the snap stuff, so that Harrison is like the X receiver when the ball is snapped, but it's, you know, some little dude right here close to him is the slot that just takes that outside like clears the trash out essentially. They 100% need that guy. They needed that last year, and I was kind of killing them for not adding that to the Cardinals roster. So that's a little sneaky addition that you dorks who listen to this podcast can be excited about when you see them add that in free agency or in the draft.
Why are the Cardinals signing this guy for 1 year, $11 million? It's like, well, that's one clear single roll.
Clear some space. Exactly. That's what they're doing. Okay, so that was like 20 minutes on Mike LaFleur. We've got to be the only podcast that's doing 20 minutes on Mike LaFleur to the Cardinals. Other one that I'm excited about that I like, that this is probably a little under the radar too. I like the Commanders promoting David Blau to be the offensive coordinator and take the place of Cliff Kingsbury. And I will say this is obviously a huge projection. So this is mostly all in theory, and I could totally be wrong on everything that I'm about to say here, Nate. But I'm going to run you my fan fiction on this that I think is based in reality a little bit. So David Blau, for people who do not know David Blau, one, he's 30 years old. He's a fast riser in the coaching carousel. He was starting games. one of the many guys this coaching cycle that was starting games not that long ago. Like Sean Mannion was on a roster not that long ago. Davis Webb on a roster not that long ago. David Blau was starting games as recently as 2022 and spent his last year in the NFL on the Lions practice squad in 2023, which is an important thing to note. Because David Blau was essentially with the Lions all throughout Ben Johnson's rise up the coaching ranks. Began his career in 2019 with the Lions, which was Ben Johnson was actually there with Matt Patricia's staff. People forget about that. Then he was elevated to the passing game coordinator role, the tight end coach. Like, David Blau was there all throughout that kind of little rise before, again, finishing in 2023. And my suspicion when they moved on from Kingsbury and quickly promoted David Blau was that they wanted to keep some of what Kingsbury was doing, but they also wanted to incorporate, did the Commander, some of these tenets of like Ben Johnson's offense. So we're talking about more of a physical ground game, under center concepts, shots off in breaking routes from play action. And Dan Quinn literally said at his post or at his presser after hiring David Blau, he wants the offense to be more under center, more play action shots. Truly exactly what my little fan fiction was kind of thinking there. So I think some of this is grounded in reality, but obviously, of course, it is a big projection. What do you think about the Commanders promoting David Blau as the offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be a little bit of a smorgasbord offense. So I think he even played under Kingsbury too. So I think there's going to be some of those ideas. Yep. And that's the thing, is that some of like even just the run game stuff was always like very sound and very much like, oh, pro style. It just would have window dressing of tempo and being more gun heavy. I would say that always one of my issues with Kingsbury's offense, and I had a few, but I did think the Washington tenure was pretty good, was that the passing game can be outside based. It was that way with Kyler and that way with when they had Hopkins, and they even brought in AJ Green. And also just the play action game. So like they would do play action, but the play action concept wouldn't be attacking the areas you're faking towards. If that makes sense, there's a lot of flash fakes and then throw outside. That to me is redundant because corners don't care about a run fit. They're just like, all right, I'm on my coverage. All right, I don't care. So I think that we're going to get a little bit of a hodgepodge because like you want Jane Daniels in the gun to use his legs. Under center, the knock of under center is the limitations of the QB run game. But I still think the benefits, and you don't have to base out it. You don't have to be 50% like some of the teams are, but just more of it. And I think some more methodical drives and not always being no huddle, not always just being that, just be able to mix it up a little bit. I think it's nice that he has some carryover from Kingsbury. So I'm sure tempo will be used at times. And again, you got to use that because they created a lot of simple looks for their against defenses. That's like what some of the benefit of it all was. And that's why I think Jane Daniels was able to transition to the NFL. He had a lot of starts in college and he was like, oh, this is how defense is playing me. Great. But I think a little bit more methodicalness to the offense is what they're going for. A lot of stuff that ties together rather than just running a bunch of ball plays. And obviously they like him. Going from assistant QB coach to OC is a big bump. It wasn't assistant quarterback coach, 1 year at tight end coach, 1 year at quarterback coach, and then OC. Like, so obviously teams like him. He stayed around as a backup quarterback for a while. He wasn't a very good one, but he, like most of these guys are, but those who can do, those who can't teach. It's very easy. And those who can't teach work in a front office. That's always my joke. Teach Jim. Or they draft, they prospect players. no. So I'm just, I think it's going to be a little bit smattering. It's not going to be, oh my God, they're 100% under center, or this is going to look exactly like the Lions with Jared Goff. But I think it's just going to be meeting in the middle of what they already did well, but adding a little bit more traditionalness to the offense. But being under Ben Johnson's not a, and Kevin O'Connell as a player, pretty fun offenses to kind of be under as far as how you tie the run game and the pass game and everything.
Exactly. I mean, they were number one in shotgun rate last year. 87% of their snaps were out of shotgun were the Commanders. So we're that's what I think is exciting about this, because it's meeting in the middle there. I mentioned my static offense rankings again, lower number being less static and better. If you didn't watch or listen to the AFC show, again, go back and check it out. But it's a blend of their, and I'll tweet this out at some point, even though I'm sure people will just make fun of me for coming up with some dumb stat that doesn't mean anything, but who cares? It's a blend of your rate of plays and heavy personnel. Well, that's all that matters. Your blend of rate of plays and heavy personnel packages. That's either two plus tight ends, two plus running backs, under center rate, drop back motion rate, and play action rate. The Commanders were 22nd last year. And the Bears were, of course, we're saying blending this Ben Johnson stuff in there, they were second in terms of like the static rankings. So I think that there is a way that if we meet just in the middle there, this offense looks a lot different. And I'm just saying, from a fantasy perspective, if this offense is playing fast and they're still playing with tempo, but it's more normal football and not some of the Cliff Kingsbury goofiness, like this quote that we're throwing up here right now from Blau is a good example of something that I think, obviously, from like a fantasy standpoint, people are going to take this to the extreme here. Blau said this thing in terms of the offense is going to be built around how do we get Terry McLaurin 10 targets a game. That does not mean that Terry McLaurin is going to average 170 or going to get 170 targets this season, literally 10 a game. That is not what that means. But I think what it does mean is there's going to be more dynamic deployment of the pass catchers, and not just Terry McLaurin lines up on one side of the field for 90% of his plays like he does under Cliff Kingsbury and only runs this like very straight line route tree.
Yeah.
I think McLaurin can do more than that. And I think that they do need more receivers generally that can be more dynamic in terms of the pre-snap stuff. That's where I think that this offense can get pretty exciting. If it's still playing fast, like with some of the Kingsbury tenets, it still has some of the same run game elements that we do like that Cliff does, but the passing game just feels more under center shots over the middle of the field. I don't know about you. I don't know where you are with Jaden Daniels, but like, I think he can do more than just live in the college offense world. And that's a pretty exciting potential blend there from a fantasy asset standpoint.
Jaden Daniels has already shown me he can win in a certain way. If he wants longevity and he wants a 14-year career rather than a burns brightly for 6 years and fades away, it's that he has to learn this at some point. He has to learn to operate from under center. And he has done it, though. Arizona State, they were under center a good amount. Enough that I can remember it right here. And so it's not like he's never done it before. He also has the athleticism and also the height to operate from under center, because that's the classic reason why you put guys in the point, gun was they weren't tall enough. He's 6'4". He's my height. I mean, he's a very tall. one of those ones, every time I interview him, I'm like, yeah, man, God, ain't he run like a 4'3"? God, that's not fair. But it's one of these where he can, they must, I know, right? And then you see Trevor and he's like 6'6", and you're like, okay, that's why those are 5-star recruits. This was a 2-star recruit right here. I think he can do these things, the things that like this offense is going to ask him to do. I'm excited about it. I think it's not going to be, it has to be a blend. Caleb Williams took some time to adjust to Ben Johnson going full bore into a more traditional offense and under center, yada, yada. I think Jaden, because of his running gifts and how he wants to play, you have to keep him in the gun a little bit. But I do like this a good amount. Also, same discussion about condensed spread formations applies to Jaden, this offense too. Going from a spread heavy offense to one that's going to be probably more condensed as well.
Yeah, I 100% see that the same way, which is why, again, I really like this one. So those are two sneaky hires and potential ecosystems that I like. We're going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about one more coaching hire that I've placed in the I like it bucket. We'll get into that right after this. All right, right, we're back. We're continuing to roll through new coaching hires here in the NFC with one final hire that I placed in the I like it bucket. And that was the Falcons hiring head coach Kevin Stefanski and bringing in his former offensive coordinator Tommy Rees to call the plays. I will admit here, Nate, that I kind of waffled on this one. Did I want to put it in I like it or did I want to put it in it's fine? So I'm curious to see where you would kind of bucket this hire because, you know, when it did happen, I was like, you know, this is I totally get it. Like Stefanski, pretty good coach. I think a yep. good offensive coach generally. Tommy Rees, a little bit still an unknown as a play caller here. He comes from the collegiate ranks. He was at Notre Dame under Brian Kelly. He was under Nick Saban in Alabama before jumping to the NFL level as the pass game specialist in 2024 before becoming the offensive coordinator last year officially. So, like, again, a little bit of an unknown there in terms of him calling a plays, and I just don't know what to take. This was the thing that I was just sort of caught up on. I just don't really know what to make of the Browns offense the last couple of years because there's just been so much
nothing.
There's just been so much point to all of the things, you know, like I think Stefanski kind of got put in a bad spot where, and you know, I'm not absolving really anybody of the Deshaun Watson decision and mess, but you can't, but this is how this goes. Like, oh no, this was his guy's thing. But I think the thing that really just always stuck out to me was that Watson and Stefanski just never going to fit, never going to live in the same schematic world. And I thought that was always like just a stupid marriage beyond all the other stupid reasons it was to bring in Watson and give him that contract. So it's just been kind of tough to judge Kevin the last few years, but I still think he's a good offensive coach. So ultimately I do like the hire and where they're going here in Atlanta.
I think Stefanski / Rees also are going to know where their bread is buttered, which is Bijan Robinson, because Stefanski was a guy that fed Nick Chubb. So there's at least that to point to where you're like, okay, at least you kind of aren't going to like overcomplicate it. And the Deshaun Watson Stefanski marriage, like, because Stefanski and actually even Petzing too with the Lions, or I'm sorry, not with the Lions, but with the Cardinals, it's very under center. It's really as traditional as you get. If you look at an NFL offense, it's kind of a hybrid offense. There's some Shanahan to it, but there's some traditional elements, Eric Coryell stuff. And so when I look at it, it's like, okay, with Baker, all right, Baker wasn't great from under center. Baker is an air raid quarterback. Okay, who else we got? Jacoby Brissett, it looked good. It was a top 10 passing offense with Jacoby Brissett in there. That was actually probably maybe the cleanest of what he wants it to be like, maybe Joe Flacco as well. Maybe those traditional pocket passers. Like, but it's very vertical. Penix, if he is the quarterback, would operate great in that. But the thing is, again, Stefanski likes the under center, if not pistol. And that's where the Deshaun Watson thing always went south, was that Watson has to be in the gun, like just how he plays. Then you saw the negatives of that as time went along. And Stefanski was trying to merge those worlds. So at least he's got reps at it. So I will say that. But his decision, it's really going to come down to how much they like Penix, what they think of Penix's skill set, because Penix struggles from under center. He's probably never going to be able to do it well because he's not good turning his back. So that kind of is like already an iffiness. He doesn't attack over the middle, and that's something too. And when he does attack over the middle, he just kind of sprays. I shouldn't say he doesn't. It's just that he's very inaccurate. He's a guy that has this. He has a rocket of an arm, but he's a classic guy, much like the guy I compared him to, Byron Leftwich. He has to see it open, and then he rockets it. Throwing over the middle takes anticipation of the guy going to his zone. And that's where I see, and Baker throws the same way as well. Baker's a little bit better, obviously. But that's why I'm like still struggling to see how they would merge Penix, because that's going to be a square peg, round hole kind of thing. But I will say, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, they are going to get fed. They're going to help out the offensive line a little bit as well. So that they got some interesting things going on there. Jake Matthews getting old, Caleb McGarry, all that stuff. But I do think that I do like Stefanski. I kept him in like it because I think overall as a head coach, I really like it because I do think he can keep it going, believe it or not. I know Cleveland, I know how it is, but believe it or not, I actually do think he's a pretty solid head coach. Play calling wise, I have to see it with this personnel and I have to see what they decide at quarterback, because again, that's where I'm kind of like squinting at it to see. But Bijan should be very happy because he's going to get used a lot.
Yeah, that's the thing here. And it's a little tough to pin Stefanski down exactly with what he is, because as you mentioned, he kind of blends a lot of different things generally. Yeah. And then so much of the last few years was, well, now Ken Dorsey's a part of the offense and Dorsey lives in a completely different world. And yes, that was like an arranged marriage to fix an arranged marriage with Watson. So it's just kind of like hard to, plus then Shador was starting at the end of last year and then Dylan, it's just like, it was a whole mess of like all these different worlds. But I do generally think that Stefanski wants to have like a zone based run game, but he has also incorporated gap based concepts as well. And I think that's exciting for the run game with Bijan Robinson, because Atlanta, the last couple of years under Zach Robinson, who we're going to talk about a little bit later, because he was hired by the Bucks, they were just pure zone. Like they led the NFL in zone rushing rate the last 2 years and by a pretty significant gap. And that, I think actually bringing in some more duo or man gap based concepts here would help out the run game. Would like,
that's
part of the
point.
I'm not going to say a criticism of Bijan Robinson at all, but part is like, oh, he doesn't make as many explosive rushing plays before this year when he made a ton of explosive rushing plays. But it's like, if you get him some of these, you know, power concepts in the ground game, that can actually increase the odds that he hits those explosive plays. So as if you needed any more reason to think like Bijan Robinson makes the leap to that ultra elite tier this year, I think that's a pretty good selling point.
That is a fantastic point, because even at Texas, I've always thought Bijan's best run concept for him is duo, because it matches his, because he has that slalom running style, that very glidey running style. And that's perfect for duo, because duo, again, you want to go vertical and then go horizontal. So it's just matches his running style. He's a guy that's good at everything. Do not get me wrong. But I always have thought his running style is ideal for duo. And that's a great point, because of how much they use that. They are more of a vertically based run scheme. They got under Callahan, they would use a lot of like pin pull stuff to the outside, but they're using pullers. But duo that's a great point. I want to just even look what Cleveland was at. Yeah, the Browns were 7th, and this is FTN. So there's a little gray areas here, but they were 7th last year. And how many times how many times they ran duo was just last year. I'm sure if I did like a multi-year look, they would be one of the teams that ran some of the most. But that's where a lot of good offenses are going. And again, I think Bijan is a great fit for that type of run scheme.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting for Bijan. I agree with you. Like, I'm interested to see how Drake London gets deployed, because I do think in more of a Rams-style offense, he was perfectly deployed and used by Zach Robinson, like to his strengths, especially in 2024 when he was getting so much slot work. And I do imagine this is going to be more of a 12 personnel heavy offense, but Atlanta already leaned pretty 12 heavy personnel after being the most 11 personnel heavy team in 2024. The interesting to see if they bring back Kyle Pitts, $16.3 million franchise tag number for tight end. So it is affordable if they want to do it, but I don't know. That's a new regime. Kyle might want a fresh start elsewhere. So we'll have to see about that when it comes to the passing game personnel. But yeah, it does ultimately come back to quarterback. And we talked about this on 301, where I could see, hey, we want to see a year of Michael Penix, so maybe we bring back Kirk Cousins, or they sign Joe Flacco, who's a free agent and has experience with Stefanski and these guys. And then, you know, hey, well, that's like our fallback plan. Or I threw them out as a Malik Willis team where they just completely start over. I could see it going either way for Atlanta, and those are just clues and kind of breadcrumbs that we'll have to examine over the next few weeks. But I want to get to the it's fine category here, Nate, because I want to start it with another maybe controversial one here that I think, I think two of my three people will actually probably rather throw in the I'm skeptical or I hate it. Starting with Lions hiring former Cardinals offensive coordinator Drew Petzing to be their offensive coordinator. I think this is fine. Okay. I'm not going to sit here and say it was the sexiest hire in the world. In fact, I think you could maybe say it was a little. It caught me off guard. I will say that it was not the name I was expecting for the Lions to land on, but I think this is fine. I think Petzing wasn't perfect, as we'll talk about here in just a moment. I have my criticisms of some of his work in Arizona, but I also don't think it was as egregious as it is getting made out to be. And I think it fits. I think what he wants to do really fits the personnel in Detroit here. So ultimately, Nate, that's why I landed on is fine. I think it's fine.
Yeah. I think fine plus is how I would end up on it. I've had multiple Twitter threads about a couple of Twitter boogeymen that the Lions were interviewing Arthur Smith at first. And I was like, no, Arthur is great fit for what you guys want to do. I'm telling you guys, he's great. And then then Petsing happened. And I was kind of just like, hey, he's actually a little bit better than I think you guys are realizing, especially run game wise. It's Dan Campbell's going to oversee it. And Dan Campbell has a certain philosophy that he's going to believe in. And Petsing is part of that. He just talked about Cardinals and we talked about Stefanski. Like, are you getting the hint that it's going to be run centric? That's going to be more power, more at you runs. And the other thing too, I had some people kind of go like, well, you could say all of his success was Clayton Adams. I'm not saying you're fully wrong, but I will say that if you, that's your
we
biggest
knock. You're not saying that.
I know if the biggest knock is that, oh, Clayton Adams made him, well, he's going to Hank Fraley, who has a lot of say in this run game, is going to say. So I think the run game is going to get a boost because that's what he believes in. It was always an explosive run game. And now he's got Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, depending on what they want to do there. But that's fine. He's going to get buy-in. Like, no, that year where they actually were rolling a little bit in 2024 and like kind of second half of 2023 and then 2024. It was not like the worst offense, I think some people say. Like, I think this is how I put it on the Twitter thread. I said, the best compliment I can give Petsing is that everything he does is sound. There are times it could be more creativity in the passing game, but it's not egregious and the play design still made sense. And I think that's why I think I go fine plus, however you want to say. I think the run game still, I mean, the offense has still stayed like okay. Like, they were top 10-ish offense in the one year that everybody was kind of healthy. There's still frustrations with it. That was actually the most quarterback Kyler Murray ever played. There was glimpses of Kyler playing his best ball, and they just all fell off this year. But yeah, I'm fine with this. I'm more optimistic about this than Morton, and I kind of have said that for months and months and months. So yeah, and for what they want to do, it matches stylistically, and with Campbell overseeing it, you can kind of twist in some new ideas. I don't know. I like this because it matched their play style and it matched their personnel very well. And I think that's why I like this. Maybe some other people do.
Yeah, I remember texting you like back in August, sending different clips or quotes back and forth to each other in the summer last year about like John Morton from the Lions training camp, being like, I don't know about this. And then he was demoted midseason. And there's a lot of reason to, I think, to believe that this is going to go better here, Drew Petsing. You mentioned the run game. We actually just showed a quote from Dan Campbell there where to be a good coordinator, you have to know all of it, the run game, the protections, and certainly the pass game. And that's where I feel like Morton really was lacking. And I think that they had issues from a personnel standpoint in the run game. Of course, we know offensive line turnover. They had turnover from a personnel standpoint with Frank Ragnow retiring, Kevin Zeitler moving on. But then they also had injuries throughout the course of the year, which I think that was a real struggle. And that was where Morton left a lot to be desired. And then in the pass game, too, you mentioned some of the lack of creativity with Drew Petsing. I agree. That's something I complained about a lot, you know, in terms of the alignment of the receivers, some of the condensed formations. They were 28th in motion rate last year. And that's stuff, though, that Dan Campbell's going to make that not a problem. Like that's where this still flows from Dan down to the coordinator, whether it was Ben Johnson or John Morton. Like it's still Dan Campbell's vision that you are executing here. That I think has been proven with the fact that Campbell has called plays for this team twice now. I think we know he's not just
play caller twice and called plays twice. I just love that.
You gotta love that. And I think that's something that it's great that he can do that. You break glass in case of emergency, but you don't want him to always be your play caller. And I think that's why they're hiring a guy who has experience calling plays in Drew Petsing. Yep. And so, some of that creativity, I think, will naturally be back into it. And the other part of it, and again, not to keep bagging on poor John Morton, I don't even know what he's doing these days, but certainly not listening to this podcast. The other thing that was tough with Morton was that he was very much like a vertical based passing background, which just doesn't really fit these two receivers, whether it's Jamison Williams or certainly Amon-Ra St. Brown. And St. Brown, it's like you can't really screw that guy up. He's too good. His role is too insular and important to the offense. But with a guy like Jamison Williams, there wasn't really as much of a change in his route tree as people were painting it. There's a lot of other factors that you can kind of do. Choose your own adventure with his breakout in the second half and complete uninvolvement in the first half. But I do think one of the things that's important for J-Mo and Dan Campbell knows this is like you got to get him going on these like in-breaking routes over the middle of the field. And that's what Drew Petsing's passing games and route concepts are all about. Even if his old quarterback didn't throw those, guess who is going to throw those? The guy we're showing on the screen right now in Jared Goff.
That's literally what I wrote down. I go, Jared Goff, dig routes. I was going to bring it up if you didn't.
Yeah.
Because that Goff is much better fit for what Petsing wants. Remember I just said what quarterbacks was Stefanski? And we were just talking about like Jacoby Brissett, Joe Flacco. Guess who has the same play style? Jared Goff. Guys are going to hang and deliver, comfortable turning their backs to the defense, and are going to throw stuff over the middle. And Goff doesn't throw go balls. Like, that's not his thing. Like, he wants to throw stuff over the middle. Ever since he was at Cal, that's how he wants to play. Seam benders and digs. And then if not, check it down and just do it very quick. But I think the personnel matches. I actually think Isaac Tesla is going to get a boost because of just how he uses and some of the inbreakers I've seen him on. He's still raw. He's a freak, man. I rewatched him a little bit. And I'm like, just like, he's raw, but he's a freak. But even in 2024, when they had some health, and again, Clayton Adams was there, the Cardinals finished 11th in DVOA on offense, 13th passing, and 9th rushing. Again, that's not offensive. And even the year before, when it was like Dobbs for part of the year, who else? And then Kyler came back from injury. They finished 15th in weighted DVOA. They were rising up the ranks. And if you look at EPA, I think they had the most explosive run game over those 2 years, 23-24. So again, and what do the Lions, what are they based off of? Jahmyr Gibbs' explosiveness, Amon-Ra St. Brown being a power slot and just working over the middle, and Jared Goff throwing stuff over the middle. And they got Hank Fraley and Dan Campbell to insulate him. I could talk myself into this one. Like, I refer to it, I think, originally as this is a single that can leg it out to a double. Like, it's not a home run, but the Lions definitely got on base here, and they maybe get like a double here. And that's how I view it. I like this a lot, actually. Yeah. I went from fine plus to I like it in the conversation that we just had.
it's fringy. I think when you start to put all the factors together, in addition to Hank Fraley and everybody that's on the staff, and just some of the how these players are so baked in and what could even get better about them, you do talk yourself into it. And I will just guarantee you guys out there, 90% of the other fantasy shows you're going to listen to are going to slam this higher. They're going to hate it. But hopefully we can zig a little bit where everybody is zagging, because I do think there's a lot of appealing notes here with Drew Petsing going to the Lions. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we've got a few more hires to fit into the it's fine bucket. We'll get into those right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to run through the new coaching hires here in the NFC. We're in the it's fine bucket. And on the other side of the break, we talked about Drew Petsing and how we kind of want to push back on some of the negative backlash towards that hire. I kind of want to do the same with this next one here in the it's fine bucket. And that was the Bucs hiring Zach Robinson as the offensive coordinator. He was obviously previously the offensive coordinator for the Falcons. And I was really surprised by the negative backlash that this one got, Nate. I don't know where you're at. I'll throw this to you first before I ramble on and on about it. Like, what did you think of Robinson's tenure in Atlanta? What do you think of him coming here to Tampa Bay to take over Josh Grizzard's role that he took over from Liam Cohen, who obviously is the head coach now in Jacksonville?
He showed that at first maybe sometimes had some silo parts to the offense, but over time learned from that, which is what you want to see from your play caller, and also had a run game that was, I mean, incredibly dynamic. And I know the John Robinson caveat, but just one that was well coached. Was that the offensive line coach? We'll find out with Ledford. But the Bucs actually have a pretty solid offensive line coach, or at least I thought. So we'll see how that year is. But I thought this was a guy that adapted, at least tried to adapt, with sometimes with one hand tied behind his back with his quarterbacks. He had Achilles, Kirk Cousins, who only could plant one direction and couldn't operate under center for the first year. And then you have Penix, who has his limitations as well, and limitations that don't fit exactly what that offense wanted to be. But I was fine with Zach Robinson. I think that's where I am with this grade. I didn't think he was offensive at all, because we had a whole show, I think, in September. I think they played the Panthers and got skunked. And then we started just going like, all right, you guys need to do this. You guys need to do this. You guys need to do this. And they kind of did. And so that's kind of, they tried at the very least. So I don't know. I thought by the end of Robinson's kind of tenure, I know he had kind of like people cracking jokes, like the PFF OC and everything. I actually thought he was okay. Like, there's stats to point out with it. They try to be explosive. But if you have a young quarterback that can't move much and wasn't attacking the areas you're trying to attack, and you have another older quarterback coming off an injury, it was kind of like you're limited anyway. So we'll see how that matches with Baker, because he has some of those limitations too. But I think actually like cohesive game planning and everything, he actually made a lot of sense to me when I was watching, especially Falcons games this year.
Yeah, that's a sort of how I felt as well. That, yeah, he troubleshooted and problem solved over the course of the season, which is what you want to see out of a coordinator. I think some of the guys we've talked about in the it's fine bucket have even like a Petzing, I think, struggled with that at times. I think Bobby Slowick, who we talked about in the it's fine category, like of those three guys that are sort of in the Twitter boogeyman sort of category there. I think we need to do like a list of who are the Twitter boogeymen and you know, what are the rankings.
We really should.
we got to do a show. That's like a June topic. Somebody put that on the schedule for June, whether it's show or 301 or whatever. We got to do a Twitter book, like debunking
Twitter
boogeymen.
I liked
our
all-football 301 team, which was like the mid-tier guys. That was a fun show. And then, yeah, I like the, yeah, who are the boogeymen show, which would be a great one at all positions too.
And I think why these guys – and I'm not like, listen, there are definitely coaches out there that are bozos. We're going to talk about,
oh yeah,
one of the hires here in just a moment. Don't worry about it. But like a lot of these guys, I don't mean to just defend all of them, but I do think so much of it is you're a victim to who your what your personnel is, and especially who your quarterback is. And that's where I come back to with Zach Robinson and why I just think that the Michael Penix selection was so bizarre for so many reasons. But the biggest thing is that I just don't think he fits this style of offense like whatsoever. And one of the biggest complaints about Robinson, at least from people that I've talked to, is like, wow, what's with all the pistol stuff? Like, why do they use the pistol so much? And to be fair, the Falcons led the NFL in pistol dropbacks with 125 last year and were second most in 2024 with 139. So that is a lot of pistol. But one of the reasons that they do that is because it sort of kind of splits the difference between being in the shotgun and being under center, where you need to, as you said earlier, you need to be under center to like marry the run and the pass game. So they're kind of trying to split the difference there for the young quarterback. Mm-hmm. And it's really a Penix based thing, and was a Kirk Cousins thing because he couldn't move in early 2024. At the end of this past year, when people didn't care about the Falcons anymore, fair enough, they were kind of looking much better when Kirk was just
healthy,
and that was without Drake London operating at the height of his powers either, because he was coming off a PCL injury. And I there's a lot to like about this one, where he's blended. We've seen him in 11 personnel heavy offense in 2024, where they're moving Drake London around. We saw them then more of a 12 personnel team, so he's already kind of showed the ability to be in two different worlds, to do some of the things that we like in terms of a lot of motion. And I just think with Baker, you're going to see a lot more under center play action stuff that is just the more traditional cut of this offense generally. So I think there's actually a lot that Robinson could, he's not going to be as good as Liam Cohen, but I think he could be somewhere between where Cohen was in 24 and where this offense was last year, which admittedly to be fair to Josh Grizzard, they were just so banged up in a lot of different ways this past year.
Banged up, and then some guys just kind of like tapered off. The O-line played weird. Bucky Irving was not good when he came back from injury. Probably should have just sat out, even though he was like Bigfoot for a while. Did anyone see him at practice today? Like, but the Bucky Irving injury saga was hysterical, actually, from an outsider perspective. And that's where I'm at. Like we said this on Tuesday several times, but it is a bell curve with these guys. Like there's so many guys in the middle that are like, oh, or average plus kind of thing. And that's how I look at Robinson. I think it comes back to how the O-line plays, because that's when even Liam Cohen was cooking with this offense, the O-line was just amazing. And they just weren't last year. They had injuries throughout the year, but like that has to step back up for this whole thing to feel better. Even receiver wise. Like Godwin would be a great fit in this offense. Emeka Ibuka is a great fit. If Robinson's going to carry over some Ram stuff, I mean, ideal fit, actually. And we'll see what happens with Mike Evans. But if he comes back, he's a great fit as a condensed split X, like we talk about. I mean, it's just they have like decent personnel to run all this. And again, I'm glad you brought up like the end of last year. Like that wasn't a bad offense. I actually kind of liked it for some points. I was trying to look up what their actual – they finished kind of middle of the pack and everything. But if you talk to people, you would have made it sound like this was the worst offense they've ever seen in their lives. And they finished like 14th, 12th and everything. Also, Petzing, I had to get the stat in real quick because Petzing will never go away. The 3 years with the Cardinals, he called plays, 23, 24, 25. They finished 7th in rushing success rate, fourth in explosive runs on design runs. It's just that their passing stats were kind of middling. But passing, 19th in success rate, they just weren't explosive through the air enough. And that was, and this is including when Dobbs was starting and other people were starting Brissett and everything. So that run game's going to cook there. And I think Goff is going to be a better player for that. But anyway, same thing kind of with the Falcons stuff. Like, and when Robinson was there, it made sense why they did everything. I thought he was trying to mitigate a lot of issues with some of the personnel. Who's receiver two for the Falcons, you know, for half
dude,
of this year?
Dude, who's
receiver
three? I mean, obviously, yeah. Darnell Mooney wasn't even healthy, but then it's just like that was a problem with that team generally, was that they were just so – remember they cut Ray McLeod? And there was some there was a lot of weirdness going on and fired the receiver coach. There was a lot of weirdness going on with that team last year, but they just had no depth at that position. So once Drake London got hurt, the fact that they were even middling from an offensive standpoint at the end of the year, that's a huge, I think, accomplishment.
The Falcons right now, the win totals just came out this week on some gambling sites, and the Falcons over under win total right now is 6.5. It's like, that's what the roster is right now. You know, like that's where everyone thinks of this roster right now. So just kind of paint the picture of what he was doing with a team that's projected to win 6.5 games this year, even though they're all in. They're never going to pick this high again. Yeah. And they have one of the longest playoff droughts in the NFL. Oh, I love the Falcons.
Oh, my God. God, you got to love the Falcons. That couple years there was just a complete mess. So I think there's still some hope for Zach Robinson for sure. Again, not perfect. I do want to see what the run game looks like. I think that's the biggest fall off from losing Liam Cohen. But there's still a lot of potential, certainly, for these passing game weapons, where there's going to be a ton of offseason debate and a ton of – we got to find out if Mike Evans is coming back here. A lot to discuss with the Bucks overall. But we've got one more in the It's Fine bucket before we get to the I'm Skeptical group. And the last one here in It's Fine is the Seahawks hire offensive coordinator Brian Flory to take over for Clint Kubiak. Brian Flory, as you and I talked about, Nate, has an extensive background as a coach and a front office member. He was most recently the run game coordinator and the tight ends coach for the San Francisco 49ers. He's been coaching the tight ends there since 2022. George Kittle is a big fan, has talked about this publicly with Brian Flory. And of course, the run game coordinator, that was my first thought when they hired him, because I don't know much about Flory personally, but you know, when they first hired him, I'm like, oh, 49ers run game coordinator. They clearly want to keep the outside zone going and they want to keep pounding that ball. That was what Mike McDonald wanted. And I think they want that run game to be even better than it was this past season, because it was very hit and miss throughout the year. But then looking through Flory's background, just going to read off some of this stuff here. I mean, he was a collegiate and high school quarterback, but his first job coaching was back at Sacred Heart as a secondary coach and then the defensive coordinator. Then his first job in the NFL was a quality control coach with the Bills, but then he became a linebackers coach for the Cleveland Browns in 2014 and 2015 before then going to the Niners in 2019. But before he was doing that, in 17 and 18, he was like in the Dolphins front office as the director of football research. Then he does go to San Francisco, not to become the tight ends run game coordinator. He was a defensive quality control coach with the 2019 San Francisco 49ers before flipping to the offensive side of the ball. So like this dude has done everything, Nate.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. Actually, some guys we talked about, and we talked about this on Tuesday, it reminds me of Drew Petsing and Kevin Stefanski's backgrounds, who started as like DBs or GA, or they were interns for the Vikings. They just got every type of role possible. They just learned the whole building. And obviously, I mean, this is, they just won the Super Bowl. So what they did last year worked. So why change it? We want to keep Sam Darnold in this offensive flow. It has been proven now that this is the best type of offense for him. And even if it's Clint Kubiak magic dust or whatever, at least the terminology stays the same. You know, as now they have experience in not having to change the language at all. It's going to be literally the same language, which is going to help. It's not like Fleury's going to go in and go like, I got my own thing here. He's probably just going to keep the race hits going. Also being run game based, tight end coach based, I like that as well. They're coming from that background. Anyone can design pass plays. And I know they have guys on staff like Jake Peets and stuff that they have experience doing like the third down red zone stuff. So it's like, all right, the thing that we have to replace is guys that understand early downs. So in keeping some of the regime too, gotta see who kind of, I'm trying to remember who, I think they hired someone else too. So I had to look, I'm not off the top of my head, I can't remember, but it's just to keep the good times going. They have to figure out the running back room. They have to add it right guard, but at least this is why you run this offense, is you lift that floor up. And that's what this offense did. And it got better throughout the year. And I think that's just the continuation of it. Also, this is how you kind of have to read context of like how good a coach is, I mean, that's how I do it anyways. All right. How did his position room play when he was coaching tight ends? Obviously there's Kittle, but when Kittle was hurt, how did the backups play? Were they lost? Were they impact? Jake Tongis played pretty dang well this year. So
good call.
Guys got better under him. And that's always just little context clues. Like, okay, was your room decent or were you just a guy getting tabbed now? So that's one little thing I'm as a positive in his corner, but for me, it's fine because I know nothing other than what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a great call out, though, because, yeah, I thought Jake Tongis just did play really well for this team. You know, there's been other times where the tight ends have stepped up when Kittle has been hurt. So that's a really good point in addition to all of the diverse background stuff. I always note, too, about the Seattle Seahawks offense. I mean, when obviously we remember them winning the Super Bowl and, you know, burning the playoffs down in terms of the divisional round, they blew out Fleury's 49ers, and then the NFC championship game, obviously they had that firestorm with the Rams. But it is worth noting that this team, like with the composite offensive efficiency rankings that I like to look at, they were like 12th, you know. They were good offense, but they weren't a top five offense. Like there's still room to grow here. I think it's good for the passing game players that we care about, which is mostly just JSN, but you know, Sam Darnold too, and Torrey Horton. If you're a sicko like me, I know you're a fan of Torrey Horton as well. I've heard
they
are still really, really AJ Barner, another guy like some of these JSN and then the deep sleeper types. Of course, I think Cooper Kupp will probably be back next year as well. I don't think he did anything to really deserve himself getting cut, but yeah, I've heard there's still fans of Torrey Horton there. I think Shaheed will probably end up getting himself priced out of Seattle, but for those guys, it's good to see that kind of keep around. The other thing, though, is like I said, the run game could be better. That's where there was really kind of a drop in terms of this team last year. They were fifth in dropback EPA. They were 20th in rushing EPA. Like that ground game could be better. Maybe it'll be Kenneth Walker as the running back, although it sounds like according to Adam Schefter, they're not going to franchise tag him. And I do think that if Walker tests free agency, the Seahawks have money. They could bring him back.
Yeah.
I kind of think he'll end up getting the bag somewhere else. And that's just how my read on it. I could totally be wrong about that, but whoever is starting at running back for the Seattle Seahawks next year, whether it is Walker or a draft pick, if they have to replace him and Zach Charbonnet, who got hurt in the playoffs, that obviously would be good if that run game took a little bit of a step forward there. Let's get into the final bucket here, which is I'm skeptical. We have two hires here that we're going to talk about. The first is the Eagles hiring offensive coordinator Sean Mannion. Now, let me preface why I'm skeptical about this. It's not really anything about Sean Mannion, although he is another one of these very fast risers. I mean, this guy was on a roster. Yet again, as I said, he was on a roster as recently as 2023 before spending the last 2 years with the Packers as offensive assistant in 24 and then quarterback coach last year. So fast rise here from Sean Mannion. You do talk to people and they are complimentary about Sean Mannion. I think even when he was a backup in the league, he was kind of like these David Blau, Davis Mills types, like transitioning to being a coach before he was done playing type of guys. So that's obviously something to be skeptical about. He's a completely fresh face. The other reason I had trouble kind of categorizing this one, Nate, is because this, if he's going to bring in anything that looks close to like a Green Bay type offense, that is a pretty hard schematic left turn from what the Eagles offense has been recently. And I know you have a lot of thoughts on this, so I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
I've been trying to theorize on this a lot and just figure it out because I did the All City show, network show with the Eagles guys. So take out the vowels. So PHLLY, I think is what they call them. But they, EJ Smith and Bo Wolf. And so when I was doing that show, they're asking me about Mannion, and really where my brain went back to, even before his NFL stuff, I first heard of Sean Mannion playing at Oregon State and why Oregon State is a team that's always, he was throwing the ball to Brandon Cooks a lot. But why
a lot.
And why Oregon State is always on my radar is because I'm a Paul Chryst disciple, and Paul Chryst is like best friend in the industry who runs the exact same offense we would run at Wisconsin was Oregon State, Mike Riley. So it's a very traditional offense. It's under center. It is drop back. It's deep drop back stuff. It's a lot of Norv Turner. And again, it's sometimes hard to shake that from your bones. So then when he gets into the NFL, he first it's under that train wreck Chris Winkie offense under Fisher, and then it's Sean McVay. There's a name you haven't heard in a while. And then it's the yeah, Vikings. And then a lot of Seahawks, Vikings. He actually has lived in a lot of same places as myself, Seattle, Minnesota. But some of that's KOC. And KOC is a very vertically based offense, under center, drop back, seven-step drops. But that's stuff that's digs, that's posts, that's over the middle. And if I don't know, Eagles fans are tired of this. I get it. But that is where I'm kind of curious, because like you just said, mm-hmm. Jordan Love and Jalen Hurts don't play a lot alike. And if he's that Packers offense is more McVay-ish and more Mike Riley-ish than it is Shanahan-ish. So that is very vertical. It's an at-you run game, a vertical run game, the hard play action with the duo sets, a lot of digs, a lot of seven-step drop stuff and letting it air out. Now, Hurts is a great deep ball thrower. And when he's comfortable, mm-hmm. he can throw over the middle. It's just that he's not comfortable doing it often. So I'm just curious how they merge this. It's a lot of under center. Yeah. Hurts is another guy that's not always comfortable under center. How do they merge that? Because that's where you want to see that next step, that next level. They have a new offensive line coach. That's something else that's like, okay, we're doing that too. So I have a lot of questions on this, but I do think what his bones are, what his football dogma is that kind of more Norv Turner-ish offense, which is, if you're looking for a current comparison, maybe Colts-ish, which is maybe they're trying to get back to what Steichen was doing in this offense as well. So these are just, again, I'm theorizing what it could look like because I'm very curious. I'd actually, and I know Eagles fans are tired of me bringing up his name too, Tanner McKee, who might get traded this offseason. He's a better fit for what they want to run than what Hurts is, or what Mannion has done in his past, I should say. But I don't know if that means anything, but it's something I just want to throw out there just in case.
Well, we did. Did we dip our toes in this conversation?
We did.
On 301, I think we were like, is there any universe where the Eagles, who have, you know, been known to bail on quarterbacks earlier than you, they were like, is a Jalen Hurts trade, and then they start Tanner McKee and then take a draft pick? You know, I think that's probably not going to happen, but just on the off chance that it does, we've now got it on the record on two shows here, Nate. Just
two shows,
on the off chance.
We can clip it. We're good.
We can clip it and say that we called it, even though we couched it about 100 yes. times that it wasn't going to happen. So but I think the most likely outcome is obviously Jalen Hurts is the starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I like you bringing up sort of that Norv Turner stuff, because there's definitely some tie over there. But just if you look at this Eagles offense last year, and the way I would describe the Eagles offense, I know, again, we talked about Kevin Petullo. And I'm not a Kevin Petullo defender. I'm not going
to
go to the
you went to bat
for Kevin Petullo.
Tuesday.
Yeah, went to the bat for freaking Kevin Petullo. Give me a break. Producer is literally flaming me in the chat for this. Anyways, my point here is that the Eagles offense, it's generally you're living in the same neighborhood, and just the way you design the house is kind of dependent on who the coordinator is. And I think Kellen Moore is a better interior designer than Kevin Petullo is by a lot. And that's why the offense mm-hmm. felt better in 24 than it did in 25. But there are still a lot of the same principles. Last year, the Eagles were 28th in motion rate. They were 19th in play action rate. And they were 26th in under center rate last year. Those are going to be big shifts that I think will be present in this offense. There will be more motion if Mannion took anything from Green Bay. And there will be more under center play action. And there was the Vikings game last year where Jalen Hurts took a couple of huge shot plays off play under center play action. And then the Giants game where AJ Brown was hurt, like him and Devontae Smith were cooking on these dig routes under center. And then they just kind of bailed on it and didn't really go back to it. So I think that's our next question here with this Sean Mannion thing is just one. Yeah. What does the offense look like in the pass game? Is AJ Brown a part of this, or do they kind of move away from, you know, some of that part of the previous world there? And then also in the run game, what is that going to look like? Cause obviously part of this big turnover here is that legendary offensive line coach / run game coordinator, Jeff Stoutland, decided to leave the team, after Mannion got the offensive coordinator gig. So I think there's a ceiling here on the Mannion hire. Mm-hmm. I just think there's a lot to be skeptical about in terms of all the pieces gelling together.
I'm glad you brought up that Vikings game, because that was the one game where Jalen Hurts did a couple things. I'm like, yes, this. So I even Googled it. He throws a touchdown to Devontae Smith down the field against the Vikings. And this is, if anyone wants to watch it, it is a classic as classic gets play action concept. It is an over and a post off of under center, duo action, straight back, not turning his back, duo action, not turning his back because that's duo action, not zone action. And he's just launching it deep. That is literally the North Turner offense is built off that. That is what a Sean Payton offense is built off of. That is what my what I just brought up with Paul Christ and Mike Riley. Those are literally the core concepts you learn on day one. It is the over in the post, and then you do the variations off of that. Then you do the corner in the corner. Then you do the corner in the over. You do all the variations that you can do off of it. You do cross country, double overs, yada, yada, yada. But that also in that game, he hit an inbreaker to A.J. Brown for a touchdown in the red zone. And it's one of my favorite throws Jalen Hurts has ever thrown as a professional. And that, but again, it just, we got to just try to coax it out of him. And maybe getting a guy that wasn't with the Eagles staff before, truly an outsider, maybe that's what coaxes him. Maybe that's what, hey, I got to get my stuff in too. Maybe that's what they're going for, some of the personality stuff. I've heard great things about Sean, just, you know, through the grapevine as far as just like as a guy. But I just want to, yeah, it's going to be an interesting merging of worlds. But look at that Vikings game. And it's funny because that touchdown was only the seventh under center play action they ran the entire season. And that was October 19th at that
that's
point.
That's insane.
So we need a little more of that. It doesn't have to be every play. Just three, four times. That's what you have to get to. Five, six times. And just have to hit two of them. Just have to hit two explosives off of that. And that opens up the entire offense for you.
Exactly. And that's how you can get away from it feeling like we're running, hitch routes every play or whatever. It's just divert from that world a little bit. And I think a lot of that comes back to the quarterback. So, again, we should definitely be ready to admit this might take time to get going.
Yeah.
Like this offense, if it's going to work, which we don't know if it will, but if it works, it probably feels better in November and December than it will in September and early October. Cause I think there will be some gelling that needs to take place here, which, you know, the Eagles have always known to be a very patient group, and I'm sure Sirianni will handle that well, and I'm sure it will be fine. So during all of that patience being needed moments here for the Eagles. Okay. Last one we're going to talk about here today, and this is in the I'm skeptical bucket, is that the Giants have hired John Harbaugh to be the head coach. Everyone's really excited about that. Then they hired Matt Nagy to be the offensive coordinator. And I'm skeptical. Okay. I'm actually the Matt Nagy hire makes me skeptical, put a deeper eyeglass at the entire John Harbaugh hire now too. Maybe I'm overreacting and I'm being a panic bro here. That's fine. But I don't know, man. It seems like John Harbaugh's entire plan was, we got a raw deal in Baltimore. They fired us because that was not a mutual parting of ways, anything like that. They fired John Harbaugh. That's what happened. They fired John Harbaugh, and his plan was, I'm going to bring all my boys from Baltimore, you know, whether they've been away elsewhere or whatever. Like Denard Wilson was the DC hire. He was with the Tennessee Titans, but he comes from that tree. I'm going to bring all my guys here, including Todd Monken as the offensive coordinator. And that's all I'm going to think about. And we're going to put Greg Roman on the staff. Don't worry. We're going to put Greg Roman on the staff, though. He's like an assistant on the staff because I've worked with him before. I don't know if you know that. We Harbaughs love to pass him around. But Todd Monken gets the head coaching job in Cleveland. And it's like, oh, shoot, we got to hire Matt Nagy. And I'm sorry, but like this is just the least inspiring thing that's happened throughout the whole, and look, maybe I'm wrong. Let's say all the caveats. I could be totally wrong about this. Whatever. Matt Nagy knows more about football than me. But Nate, I don't think this doesn't light my fire whatsoever.
Oh, I mean, just look at the tree. That's actually really great. That kind of like is the issue. It was one guy he worked under. Then he goes as the head coach, flames out, and goes right back to Kansas City, which is also an issue in Kansas City as well. But also with Nagy, it's just that when he was in Chicago, so much of that offense was either gimmick BS, like they would start every season with a wing T formation because the Chicago Bears fight song has wing T in it, or it was exactly what Andy Reid ran the previous week. True. And no, he did. And it's one, he's so uninspiring. It was never, even with Fields, we know what Justin Fields is now. They never did anything to like morph the offense to what Fields was good at, which is a concern. There is a stylistic clash here. between Nagy and Dart. I love Monken with Dart way more than this because Nagy and an Andy Reid offense, and we talk about this, it's a true West Coast offense. And I'll talk about one positive with Nagy in a sec. Don't get me wrong. But
okay.
That Dart, if you look at his spray charts, you just watch him, he's a very boom-bust quarterback. It's downfield shots, it's a lot of screen stuff, or it's him scrambling. There's not a lot of stuff over the middle. There's not a lot of quick hitters. You know, there's some RPOs they ran, but his quick hitters were like over routes and stuff. So when I'm watching Dart and then I watch Nagy, watch a Chiefs offense from the last 15 years. Quick hitters, RPOs, bubbles, slants, just stuff, you know, that because they want to attack horizontally very quick. They want to augment the run game or help out the run game. But I'm looking at that and I'm like, that's a terrible like stylistic fit between Nagy and what Dart's good at. Because Dart to me is like has to be shooting down the field or running. Almost funnily enough, used almost like Daniel Jones. but it's really but I look at this and I'm just kind of like, I'm a little worried about this. As far as just it's an uninspiring hire. I thought the best time Nagy was in charge of something was the 2017 Chiefs, which got him the job for the Bears, where Alex Smith last year there on third down, they just started launching stuff and it was awesome. And it's exactly what the NFL meta needed. And I was really inspired by that. Ever since then, there's nothing that's been inspiring about what he's done as a play caller or anything. Just look at the Chiefs the last couple of years, look at the end of the Bears regime, all that stuff. No quarterback got better. Anything else I can paint? Greg Roman. I think the Giants' O-line's actually decent, but even Roman, I'm a little like, okay. So I just am now a little kind of concerned about all this, if anyone can't tell. So I think they backdoor their way into Matt Nagy. I did like think the Monken hire would have been a lot more inspiring with Dart. This to me is just like, all right, let's get through this year and then we can assess stuff. That's what this kind of feels like.
Yeah, because with Todd Monken, I mean, and we talked about this. I was like, okay, I could really like that if that's the OC hire, because he's shown an ability to modernize. He's shown an ability to like run out of condensed formations and all this type of stuff that, you know, sort of again, the static rankings, as I've said, the Ravens were fifth best in my static rankings last year. The Giants were 29th in the static offense rankings. Guess who was 30th? The Kansas City Chiefs. By the way, they hire Brian Callahan as the offensive coordinator. You know who's dead last in the static offense rankings? The Tennessee Titans.
No. Yeah.
He was a quarterback coach. Brian Callahan, quarterback coach. Guess who was 31st? The place that Brian Callahan came from, the Cincinnati Bengals. And look. It's a made-up stat, okay, and like Matt Harmon's brand of favorite football. It doesn't really matter, okay? Who cares? Like what I think is meaningless.
But you're trying to paint a picture here.
yes. And this is like what Nagy, what I'm projecting Nagy and this coaching staff to bring to the table is like everything I don't like about football at this point. Like offenses that, because I think that it's funny, you mentioned that you think some of what Nagy is going to bring here is like not a good fit with Dart. I was like trying to devil's advocate myself and be like, well, if it's just going to be a bunch of like RPOs and like kind of these one read plays and all that, like I think Dart, you know, it's kind of like what he did at Ole Miss a little bit, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Right. That's basically what he did. So maybe it would make him comfortable. But guess what? Even if that works kind of in 1 year, year two, year three of this experience, Giants fans are going to be like, what's next? Like, what's next? And there's never been an ability with Matt Nagy where what's next? Like, what's the innovation off of this? Like, where are we going? And that's where I think Todd Monken was like the guy that took Lamar from, you know, phase 1.0, 2.0, whatever, to the next phase. And agreed. That's where I think that even if this works, which I don't think it will work, and now, again, this makes me skeptical of like the entire we're just turning the keys over to John Harbaugh and everybody reports to him. And like he just wanted to mostly bring his old buddies here. Like, when's the last time old coach brings all his old buddies here and fixes a team that's not big? Like, when's the last time that worked? I don't know. Maybe
Andy Reid went to Kansas City.
Yeah. But like what was the age gap there? You know, I don't know. Right. Like whatever.
Right.
Age is not everything, but it gives me a little bit of Pete Carroll vibes, even though he kind of did have an arranged marriage. Well, and that's the thing though. Pete Carroll had an arranged marriage with offense coordinator Chip Kelly. And now I think this is a bit of an arranged marriage with John Harbaugh, Matt Nagy. And instead of John Harbaugh instead of Pete Carroll and his sons, it's like John Harbaugh and Greg Roman, who's like basically a Harbaugh, like a part of the member of the family. So the Harbaugh mafia, I don't know. So again, this is just like everything that I would not want for a young quarterback is essentially what the Giants have presented Jackson Dart. And like, if you're a Dart optimist, I don't think you can like this. And I think if you're a Dart skeptic, I think you don't like this either.
You're piling on. Well, and that's even too, is that the because they didn't directly overlap, I don't think, in Philly, but Harbaugh, John, worked for Andy Reid in Philly before he got the Ravens job. And so even there, it's still connections with that. You know, you said bring back his old buddies. Well, we'll bring back my buddy's buddies here too. And I get NFL, there's going to be a lot of that kind of overlap with some of these staffs and everything. But look what Mike McDonald just did. He just, 3 years in a row, he's hired an OC that he's never worked with before. Guy just won a Super Bowl doing it. It's okay to go against your tree or go away from your tree and just try and go, hey, this might be an interesting idea, and go with it. But yeah, I respect Harbaugh a ton, and I respect what they're trying to do. They're trying to, like, even personnel-wise, like, they had so many holdovers. Like, the Maras don't want to fire anybody. So they've had so many personnel guys there forever, and they kind of cleared house there. Okay, that's fine. That's one thing. But then the coaching staff had kind of just this hodgepodge going on. It's respectable. Don't get me wrong. There's respectable names here. Greg Roman can cook up a run game fairly well. Maybe just don't have him call plays. But again, he's a pull guy, and Nagy and Reed are zone guys. So we got a little square peg round hole going on there. The offensive line, I do think it was way underrated last year, but again, might be some drop off there. I don't know. I'm skeptical. I'm very skeptical with it. Not saying completely out. I've been proven wrong plenty of times. Dart has some fun aspects to him, but this staff leaves me very worried about how they can grow him and mature him rather than just make everything easy buttons and guardrails and just kind of making it easy for themselves. Maybe that's the best way to put Roman and Nagy. They make a lot of things easy for them and not the players. And that kind of makes me worried over time.
That's exactly where I kind of come down on this, is that I think you needed somebody here to push Jackson Dart to the next phase. And instead, I think you've got something here where I would be surprised if we don't run into the ceiling pretty quickly with this pairing. In addition to the fact that the personnel, the offensive line, I agree with you, was underrated last year. The personnel around Jackson Dart needs a ton of work. Like, Malik Nabers might start the year on PUP, and I don't think people are talking about that enough. And, you know, there's definitely like, oh boy, we're just going to do all the bubble screens and cheesy stuff to Malik Nabers. Well, what if he's not there in September, and when he comes back in October, he's like not himself all year long? That's troubling. Wandale Robinson's going to walk. He's a free agent. They're doing Darius Slayton again, you know, because he's on a big contract extension. And it's just like, that,
he's
that's
on the
it.
Steve
that's
Young the USFL contract, 25 years, $1 million a year. That's his contract.
Darius Slayton and the Giants are like the toxic couple, you know, that just like every year they're about to break up, and then they just get back together again. And he's probably going to have to play a bunch of snaps for them this year, because again, they don't really have it. They have to probably take a wide receiver early in the draft, like potentially with their first pick, because that room is just so barren. And that's just going to be a very bizarre dynamic with this offense. So yeah, I'm skeptical. I think perfectly sums up what we're looking at with the New York Giants right now. So we'll see. Hopefully we're proven wrong on that. Nate, appreciate you, buddy. This was a hell of a show. I'm glad you stuck with me for two big power episodes of these full coaching breakdowns. But I think we learned a lot along the way.
We did. And even some of my grades changed as I like midstream, as I'm talking and getting to marinate on it. But it's nice. We get the staff settled, and we're going to be talking a lot about these guys in months to come. But thanks. It was a lot of fun, bud. I enjoyed these shows. So thank you for having me.
No doubt. I enjoyed them well. And there's going to be a lot of talking here going forward. A couple things to note. Going to do it for today's show. But remember, we are excited to share. Nate and I will be in Indianapolis for the Combine next week with a bunch of our Yahoo Sports colleagues. Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, Football 301, and Inside Coverage. We're all going to be on the road and live every day at the NFL Scouting Combine. You can check out our show schedule here if you're watching us on YouTube. On Tuesday, Justin Boone, that's right. Remember him? Yeah, we're pulling him off of vacation. No more fun time for Justin Boone. He is going to be making his glorious return to the pod with me in Indianapolis, and we're going to have Yahoo senior NFL reporter Joy Epstein joining as well. We're going to highlight all the biggest rumors, regarding top free agents, trade targets at quarterback, wide receiver, and running back. That's going to be live at 2 p.m. Eastern. Very excited for that episode. Justin Boone being back, man. What has Boone been up to
these
last few weeks? That is what we're really going to uncover on the next episode. But until then, we are out.